The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast on Tuesday, the 10th of September, 2019. On the podcast today, I have Juliet Davenport, founder and chief executive officer of Good Energy. Ticker there is Good, and Juliet discusses their interim results and progress going forward. Plus, I also have John Prideau, Chief Executive Officer of Boku. B-O-K-U is the ticker there. And John talks about the highlights from their 6 months results and also discusses their outlook. Plus, Alan Green, CEO of Brand Communications, talks about the following stocks: Cadence, JD Sports, Tiziana Life Sciences, and Itaconics. And as always, I have two lists for you, the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNS is two. By the way, if you received RNS from Vox because you have the app, which is free to download, of course, at your app store, and you like the contents of an RNS you read, then please hit that thumbs up button, okay? And it could feature on this podcast and on the front page of voxmarkets.co.uk.
To receive free company updates straight to the front screen of your smartphone whenever a company you follow releases significant news, download the free Vox Markets app from voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Juliet Davenport, founder and chief executive officer of Good Energy. Ticker there is Good. That's easy to remember. Juliet, thanks for joining me.
Good morning.
Now, you've had your interim half-year report out to the 30th of June, and the figures are looking very good, and we'll dig into those in a bit. Before we do, Juliet, for people listening right now not familiar with Good Energy Group, can you summarise what the company is about, please?
Yeah, so the company was founded around 20 years ago to really work with customers, consumers in the energy market, to try and provide them with green alternatives. So we're a 100% renewable energy company, but we also help people in their own homes generate power, looking after businesses, and really looking to new technologies that are coming through, like electric vehicles, storage, solar. And we're a facilitator in the middle of that.
Yeah, absolutely. And looking at the 6 months results, all looking good. Revenue's up to like 3%. Administration costs down 11%. You've got profit before tax up 8%. You've got net debt down 30%. So it's all looking good. What's driving this, Juliet?
So I think a couple of years ago, we decided to take a look at this market. And right now, there's a rush to the bottom on price, companies cutting margins. And we took a step back and said, actually, is this the way we want to go? Or do we want to slightly redirect the business? So we're now focusing on the business market, where we think we can add significant value, and on the small generation market, where we can support consumers generating their own power. And that is really the turnaround of the business that we've taken, to support consumers going forwards rather than just trying to supply power at low margin.
Yeah, so explain it more. How can you support a small local people to produce their own power? How does that work?
So this goes back to kind of nearly to early 2004, when we started being contacted by people who were generating power in their own home. And we kind of thought, actually, why don't you consider generators like customers and customers like generators, rather than large centralized power generation where you buy just power from? Actually, consumers who generate their own power need to be thought of in a different way. So we built our systems and we built our proposition around that. And what that means is that we can do that at scale. So we look after about 160,000 homes who generate power in their own homes. What we see in the future is this is the way the market's going, and now we're set up with our systems and our processes to really take advantage of that.
Yeah. So just describe now, for example, at the moment, so that if you break down the revenue, what percentage comes from where at the moment, and how will that change, do you think, going forward?
So what's interesting, obviously, when you start to shift into services, the revenues are relatively low, but the operating profit's much, much higher in those areas. So the overall revenues today, around on our electricity revenues, about 50% come from business, 50% from domestic. Most of our gas revenues are from domestic at the moment, but we're looking to then move into the business market on that area. And the sort of generation areas, a much lower percentage of revenue, but a higher percentage of operating profit.
And I've got to say, you are ahead of the curve here, aren't you? I mean, you founded this in 1999, and now, I suppose, there's a real inflection point, isn't there, as far as clean energy is concerned?
Yes. I guess my background is I'm a scientist, I'm an atmospheric physicist, so I was kind of interested in the area from a technology and a science point of view, so that was probably now it is. It's coming of age, and it does seem very relevant in terms of the climate crisis and what's going on sort of worldwide in terms of climate change and the solutions people are looking for. So yes, but it always takes time, these things.
Yeah, absolutely. And so these good results, I mean, are you seeing yourself building on these?
Yes, I mean, that's exactly what we want to do now. So we're going to continue to work towards cutting the overall cost so we can deliver our services at a better value for consumers, but looking to the new technology. So we've been involved in three research programs that include battery storage, consumer behavior, and really using technology to activate home generation and home demand's response.
Yeah, yeah, okay. And before we get to the three reasons why someone should add you to their watch list, so in the next, say, 6-12 months, what's one of the biggest sort of bits of milestones or bits of news you're hoping to release or achieve?
So we're going to be moving into the smart area with the new wave technology on smart meters, and that's the beginning of our rollout to really start to maximise that value. We made an investment in ZapMap last year, which is essentially a platform for electric vehicles and the data on electric vehicle charging points in the UK. So we're looking to continue to evolve that product and get more sign-ups to that platform. We're actually going to be rolling out our own EV product to businesses this year, and we hope to make some more announcements around storage, battery storage and investment in that area as well.
Marvellous stuff. Okay, well, one final thing. Every day in the podcast, Juliet, I highlight the top five companies that have been followed the most on our platform in the last 24 hours. So to get on that top five list, give us three quick reasons why someone should hit that follow button on your page and add them to your watch list, please.
I guess first one is we've got a proven track record. We're one of the oldest independent generators suppliers in the UK, and we are, I think, ahead of the curve on the technology change. I think, two, we're sustainably growing, we're cash generative, and we're paying a small divvy. And the third one, I think we're very relevant today. So the issues around climate change and what's going on worldwide are going to continue to move forward, and we're right at the heart of what the solutions need to be.
Marvellous stuff. Juliet, good to chat to you, and hopefully we'll be catching up in the not-too-distant future. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Justin. Bye.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is John Prideaux, Chief Executive Officer of Boku. It's B-O-K-U. John, thanks for joining me.
Hey, Justin. It's good to be with you.
Now, you've had your interim results for the 6 months ended the 30th of June, and we'll dig into some of the figures, some of the highlights in a bit. Before we do, John, for someone not familiar with the company, could you explain what it's all about, please?
Yeah, well, we started out as being a company that allowed to buy things and charge it to their phone bill, and then we extended the platform that we have that now allows you to, you know, to simplify pretty much any type of transaction which uses your mobile phone. And the real, you know, asset that we've built is this platform that connects 190 carriers in nearly 60 countries around the world, and have got customers like Apple, Sony, Spotify, Microsoft, Google, PayPal, you know, big US banks and so on, all using our services.
Wow. Yeah. Excellent stuff. All right. Well, let's dig into some of the highlights from the interim results. Take it away, John. What are you happy with here?
Well, we're happy to, you know, really see vindication of our strategy. I mean, we're able to report here results with revenues going up by 35% to 23.5 million in the half. That's even slightly ahead of where we projected at the time of our trading update. And underpinning that has been, you know, both of our lines of business, the identity business and the payments business, showing good, positive trends. The identity business, which is, you know, stemming out of the acquisition that we made at the end of last year, Denial, now Boku Identity, that was up by 36% to $3.2 million worth of revenue. Sorry, $3.4 million worth of revenue, and the payments business also showing, you know, good levels of growth, where it's up to $20.2 million worth of revenue. That's a 19% increase. And those two things sort of growing, taking our business sort of forward to greater strength.
Yeah.
Fundamentally, or go on then.
So, no, carry on, John. I was just going to say that, I mean, looking forward is looking, you mean, because you said there in your little RNS here that you reckon 52 million for the year, but you're still on track for that, you reckon?
Oh, absolutely. Look, I mean, we're a company that's been growing steadily for some time. I mean, the payments business has got high degrees of predictability. The identity business, the underlying growth there in the number of billable transactions we've been processing, that was up 100% in the 6 months to June. And that obviously sort of betokens, a good level of underlying performance as far as that business is concerned. And both of those things should take us through to the demanding target that we'd set of 52 million and an increase in EBITDA of between 45 and 50%. And both of those things, we set ourselves tough targets, and we're happy to reaffirm, our commitment to meeting those targets over the course of the full year.
Yeah, and in this space, John, who else? Is it highly competitive? I mean, you say you're the leader there. Are the people nipping at your heels there?
Not really. I mean, on the question of competition, I mean, the real constraints in our business aren't really competitive pressures. On the one hand, within the payments business, probably the biggest constraint is the pace with which our customers can, make new connections to new carriers. Can they roll out as quickly as we can support them? Because there's a certain amount of work that our customers have to do. That's probably the biggest constraint, implementation constraints as far as our customers are concerned. On the identity side of the piece, I'm not going to lie, there's any number of people who are providing identity services or fraud management services of one type or another. But in Boku's case, the constraint in our business is not so much demand, because we have something which is unique, access to the carrier data, which can securely identify your phone. No one else can do that. Mm-hmm. The constraint in that side of the business is as much as anything else, getting commercial agreements in place with mobile network operators to use that. So we have a bit of a supply constraint on the one hand, operational constraint on the other. I mean, clearly it's not holding us back. We're having good levels of growth. But, that is much more of a factor to us than sort of competition from the people trying to do the same thing as well.
Yeah, okay. And looking forward, say, next 6, 12 months, what's the biggest sort of milestone you're hoping to achieve there, or a big bit of news you're hoping to release?
Well, in the identity business, we are definitely sort of moving to a situation where we would hope to get, an international launches with big name brands, whether they be in the payment sector or in the new economy space, using our mobile identity services, either to prevent account takeover or to prevent, abuse of people sort of trialing their system on multiple occasions, or even just to remove the need for one-time pins, sent to you by text, those annoying things when you have to validate transactions. Those are the type of announcements that we would look to be able to be making over the course of the next 6-12 months or so. And we're getting a lot of demand, and there's a lot of interest on those products from major payments companies and from major online players as well.
Yeah, okay, absolutely. Okay, well, John, if someone's listening, likes the sound of what you're talking about, but are not yet following the story, give them three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page on Vox Markets and add you to their watch list, please.
Well, I think you've got a company which is, first of all, sort of showing new growth in payments. So we've had steady, predictable growth in payments. That could accelerate as we now start working out with wallets, with exposure to Asia. On identity, I've talked about the fact that we've got the potential to be able to work with some of the world's largest payment companies using our new system. But most fundamentally, there really isn't another play on the UK market where you can get broad exposure at a global level to the growth of mobile commerce. It's now more than 50% in places like the UK. In Asia, it's even higher than that. If you want to be where the future is, you should tap that follow button and find out what's going on with Boku.
Yeah, excellent stuff. John, thanks for that, and hopefully we'll catch up in the not-too-distant future.
Absolutely. Justin, it's been a pleasure.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Alan Green, CEO of Brand and Communications. You're Al.
I'm fine, thanks, Jess. Back from a wonderful week in Cyprus. Saw my son get married in stifling temperatures, but a lovely time and thoroughly refreshed, and spent a few days on the beach too, which is even nicer.
Nice, yeah, it's nice to get married abroad. But you often see, though, sometimes people go abroad and it's almost too hot. You see people in their wedding kit sweating, and think, oh, God, it's almost too much of a good thing, you know?
Well, it was with the groom and his best man and groom's man had Hugo Boss suits and all the rest of it, so they were stifling. I, on the other hand, had opted for a nice linen suit and linen shirt. So thankfully, there was a bit of a breeze where we were, so I was able to stand advantageously and feel the cooling breeze. But it was great. Pictures are fantastic, and there are lots more videos and bits and pieces that we're going to see over the next few weeks. So fabulous.
Lovely. Love is that. Is he still married?
yes, he is. Well, they've been together for long enough, so it was hard. In fact, they're still over there because they went over, got married, and that's where they basically had a very romantic holiday a couple of years ago and decided to get married. And so they're just over there still. They're sort of trundling around the island and just enjoying all the sites that they visited when they first went there. So
okay, well, that's one of the more important things: stocks.
Stocks,
love, life, and marriage. Indeed. Don't worry about that. That's real stuff.
Yeah.
Let's get into some real stuff.
Let's get to the exciting stuff. Yeah.
Cool. So, what are you looking at, Al? What's going on?
Okay. Couple of weeks ago, no, in fact, a week and a half ago, Cadence Minerals, KDNC, Epicode, AIM-listed mining investment company. Cadence Minerals made a massive announcement regarding the Amapa iron ore project in Brazil. The Cadence currently trades on a market cap, well, it's an asset-backed market cap of about 9 million and has a number of mining investments, which you've discussed many times, so I'll just run over this briefly. It owns 19.1% of European Metals Holdings, which is the Sinovec lithium project in Czechoslovakia, has a small stake in the Bacanora, the Sonora project in Mexico, lithium project in Mexico, and a couple of other side companies, Mexilith and Megalit. 6.5% of Aura Minerals and 12% of MacArthur. In fact, no, 9.8% of MacArthur Minerals. So, MacArthur Minerals, of course, struck the deal recently for its iron ore project in Western Australia with Glencore, a takeoff agreement. Which will be worth billions to them, plus a number of other projects. But they've been working on Amapa, the Amapa iron ore project, for the best part of this year. The company's undertook a strategic shift a couple of years ago to invest into and acquire assets directly rather than sort of buying into the company or the operating company, such as with Sinovec. Now, the Amapa iron ore project is a lapsed iron ore project, and when I say project, it includes the mine, it includes all of the administrative buildings, it includes the railway and the port. So it is a complete package in one go. This was formerly owned by Anglo American and Cliffs Natural Resources. It's in northern Brazil, close to the Atlantic Ocean. And it started operations in December 2007 and lapsed in 2012 and was sold off then. Anglo American, owned the majority of the mine then, valued its stake at $462 million. And the mine has sold all over the world, Europe, China, and into the USA, was highly successful after that point. There is still 60 million of iron ore sitting ready for shipment at the port. So, along with Indosino, which is a Singapore-based commodities group, Cadence CEO Kieran Mazaria, who I know has been interviewed by you many times here, they set up a joint venture company to acquire the Amapa holding company. This has then had to go through a judicial restructuring plan, and this plan, the company announced about a week and a half ago, was approved by the courts in Brazil, so it's done, dusted, through this process, Cadence Minerals have acquired a 27% stake in the Amapa iron ore project, which has cost them just $6 million. Now, this is, if you take the Anglo-American valuation back in 2012, that's a $600 million project. Not only that, the iron ore stockpile sitting at the port, they will start shipping it in the next few months. They will start generating revenues. the mine requires an investment of some $168 million. So to restart and recommission the entire process. So that the money from that will go into that $168 million investment to restart the mine railway and port. And after that, of course, there will be farming projects and other processes to bring the mine back on stream. But the bean counters have been over it, and a number of assessments have been undertaken. Kieran Mazzara has said that Cadence Minerals, once the mine is recommissioned, they expect to generate an EBITDA of $136 million per annum for the next 14 years, and that's obviously Cadence will own 27% of that. So the company also have within that a clause which gives them the right of first refusal to acquire up to 49% of that mine. So either way, with a $6 million investment, Cadence have acquired a 27% stake in this project. Now, given that there is and has been a squeeze in iron ore prices, the demand for iron ore is always very strong. Bringing this mine back on stream seems to be a very sensible thing to do, given also that the quality of the ore is very good. It's already been selling all over the world. So the side benefits are, of course, that the region that the mine is sited in is fairly impoverished. So, of course, it's going to bring a huge boost to that local economy over there. I think, by any standards, you know, when you're a mining investment company, you have to look at the opportunities and try and sort of look forward and see where the market's going to go. But at the level Cadence have come in at here, get this mine restarted. Even if it misses the EBITDA target of 136 million over 40 years and brings in say 100 million or 90 million or whatever, that's still a massive. A massive upswing into Cadence Minerals, and I just think where Cadence are, the assets that they have haven't been fully appreciated. I know MAPA is early days, but if you take any one of these projects that Cadence are invested in by themselves, they exceed Cadence's market cap wildly. But the MAPA project is a different ballgame altogether. So very exciting. I urge investors to take a closer look at the RNS and also to take a look at some of the articles that have been published around this, because it's certainly caught the interest of the press over the past few weeks.
Yeah, I mean, Kieran was on the podcast, and I chatted to him about it afterwards as well, saying, wow, it's big potential here. He said, yeah, there's still obviously risk. I mean, you know, you have to raise the funds and get it going. Yep. He said, and Brazil is not an easy jurisdiction, but he said he's had experience there before, and he speaks a sort of language, so...
He's got
confidence of the government there, seems like, the last bit of a... So it's not without risk, but if it does work, yeah, you know, amazing upside here, amazing upside. So definitely worth looking at, you know?
Well, I think that there have been a few pictures published on the website, and also there's an article on the branduk.net website. If you go to the Cadence feed, you'll see the article on there, and there's a few pictures of the mine infrastructure and everything else, and you know, it really is a huge site, and it's got that complete infrastructure, and I think also by restarting this, it's going to rejuvenate the local economy, but also, you know, the rail links will be improved, the road links will be improved, there's all of that to go with it, so it really is a huge project, and I think this is a small aim company potentially punching way above its weight in Brazil. And, it's going to take a few years to come to fruition. But once they start to sell that stockpile, I think that's going to happen in the next few months. And we'll have news updates on that. You know, we're at a very exciting juncture for this company.
Mm-hmm. Cool. What's next, Al?
Okay, complete change of subject, you might view this as a contrarian trade or a contrarian idea in many ways. I noted the results today from JD Sports Fashion. Now, obviously, with Mike Ashton in Sports Direct and retailers in the sector, and frankly, retailers in general, not enjoying the best of fortunes, why would you want to invest in JD Sports Fashion? Well, the share price has basically doubled in the year. I mean, it was down at just above £3, £3 a share in December last year, and it's now up to £6.67. So, you know, it's doubled in that period of time. The results today, the company announced that revenues had nearly doubled. Up 47% to £2.7 billion. Pre-tax up nearly 7% to £130 million. The company had opened 23 new stores in Europe and 7 new stores across the Asia-Pacific region. Peter Galgill, the chairman, said that despite Brexit, the company is on track for headline pre-tax profits at the top end of market expectations for the year. That's between 400 and 424 million. And he's encouraged by prospects for growth. And I think perhaps when we think of JD Sports, we just think of the JD Sports fashion store, but it's a whole lot more than that. The brands the company owns include Chow Sport, Sprinter, Get the Label, Cougar, Source Labs, Clogs, JD Gyms, Nicholas Deakins, and then it's got the adventure stores, Blacks, Millets, Teaser, Ultimate Outdoors. So it's not just a sports fashion label. In fact, probably that's a bit misleading. It should probably consider a rebrand at some point to more accurately reflect the offering that it has. But it's got this vast range of stores and outlets, and obviously the associated online offerings that go with that. And clearly, it's well run. It's I've said that before, haven't I? Yes, yeah. Obviously, no. it's well run. It's expanding rapidly. Would you invest into retail stocks now? I don't know, but I mean, this one is bucking the trend. It's a contrarian trade. So,
well, it's not really contrarian because everyone's bought it, haven't they? Pretty much because it is at an all-time high. So, if anything, I wouldn't go here. It's got to cool off because literally, it's gone from 2014. Oh, in 2013, it was 27 pence. It's now £6.70. It's been, you know, it's just gone upwards, and it's too hot by far at the moment.
It may well be too hot, but also the trend is your friend. So there are two schools of thought here.
I agree with that. But you can't buy a day where it's up like a big stock like this up 6-7%. It's you've got to wait for it to come back a little bit. You know.
Yeah, I agree. I agree, but I think there is a trend here, and I mean, maybe you want to sort of.
We're at the end. We've missed it. It's you know, we're talking about £6.5 billion company, and it's done a massive rise there on that. You know, because that's 6% is a lot on £6 billion. So I think we're too late now. We're too late. We missed the party, fella. We're out of it.
Well, if you look at the trend, the stock fell back in December last year. So maybe if Christmas sales prove a bit tougher than expected, then there might be a fallback then. Maybe that's your time to get back in. But I think either way, we've said this before about other stocks, and obviously
20 pretty much. It's not so
cheap. Yeah, it's a racy P, but I mean, it's got a lot of broker support too. You've got Peel Hunt, UBS, Berenberg, all saying buy the stock. They've got
they're brokers. They've got their hand in the pocket when they're putting the pot ready.
They're brokers, yeah, of course, we know that. But it's the anecdotal evidence supporting this. But also the fact is that, most of the most financial journos are urging us to steer clear of retail stocks and saying that retail is dead and all the rest of it. And I think, you know, JD Sports is very much bucking that trend. And it's saying if you've got the right offering, if you've got something people want, then, you know, you can still deliver very strong growth in this area. So, but I think it's one to put on the watch list. And if it does come back, if there is a pullback, then I think it's worth getting involved. It also pays a very small dividend too.
What we have to do, right, and we fail at this all the time, we get carried away with the story and how it goes. You've got to look, essentially, what kind of return are you looking to get from this? That's what it comes down to. You know, I think, can this do, you know, literally, can it do another 10% this year? I don't know. Is that what you're after? Are you after a bit more than that? I mean, if you're after more than that, you have to go with a, you know, lower than the market cap spectrum. But, I mean, because, it may struggle now to do another 10, anywhere near that this year.
Well, it made
right,
you.
The next 12 months, I mean.
Well, it may do, but other opportunities may also arise. Given the tough time that retail in general is experiencing at the moment, the outlets that JD for Sports Fashion have got are delivering. So there may be opportunities to perhaps pick up retail outlets or retail positions in towns and cities across the UK and across the world, for that matter, that they could pick them up for a song and then start to, you know, put one of their brands into that store and you know, from a very low cost base, add to profitability. Who knows? But they've got a model that's working. Clearly, they're able to expand. You know, 23 new stores across the UK and Europe, and 7 in the Asia Pacific region. You know, that's fairly strong growth. And you know, the Jen Peter Cowgill has said that they're on route to do more, and they're very, very optimistic about the full year outcome. And that's despite Brexit as well. So, anyway. Yeah.
No, it's a good business. I just said we're late to the game. Too late. We've missed the move. You know, we've missed the move by a long shot. I've always liked JD as a brander. I mean, it's always been the smarter upmarket version of Sports Direct. Is a bit cheap and shabby, isn't it? Whereas JD has always been a bit classy. You know, and I've always liked the way they present their stores. It's always looked very good, high quality business. But yeah, do you know what? I just think I'm a couple of years too late. Anyway, what else is next? What's next, Al?
Okay, well, there was an update from Tiziana Life Sciences. TILS is the epic code. That's the AIM listing, and TLSA is the NASDAQ listing. Of course, it's a dual listed company. Another positive phase one trial update today for phase one clinical data from one of its flagship products, the Furalumab, which is a nasal delivery product for neurodegenerative diseases, including sort of Nash's disease and so on. The company basically said today that the tests that had undertaken the treatment was well tolerated, and also just to go back, we discussed this before. Tiziana are using the fully human anti-CD3 technology. Fully human being meaning that it's the treatment's been developed from human molecules. So and often with this process, as we found with other companies in the past, there are lots of side effects. There are no side effects in this case, and the tests have been were well tolerated. No drug related safety issues reported at any of the doses are given. And the CEO Kumar Shalabi today said very pleased in what they believe is the first ever demonstration that nasally administered Furalumab is well tolerated. More than that, he said that the results that they provide, the scientific rationale, and with the core proprietary platform technologies, they believe it could potentially revolutionise treatment with antibodies. So this is a big step forward from the company. The share price has popped up today to reflect that. Share price currently up nearly 18% as we speak. This company, it's got Mishaclib, which we spoke about, which is a phase two. That was recent a few weeks ago, at a very exciting juncture in terms of bringing this to market. As we know, with these life sciences companies, there are many steps to go through before they can receive US FDA approval. But where Tiziana is right now, there are a number of big pharma companies looking at the work the company has done in this area and the treatments that it's developed. And once you can bring fully human technology like this into the market, having proven it through testing and proven that there are no side effects, then you're looking at a company that's going to be worth an awful lot of money. Currently trading at an 80 million market cap, this could be an awful lot higher than that. Mm-hmm, so, mm-hmm. Well done, Tiziana.
Well done, Tiziana.
Yes.
Okay. What's next? Anything else, Al?
Yep. Just a quick update. I know you're a fan of this stock, Itaconix, ITX. The results were published by them today, half-year results. Revenues up 78% to 480,000. Not a huge amount, but obviously, that's a big step forward for the company. It's their publicly stated objective to achieve sustained revenue growth and increase the commercial momentum, and there's clear evidence of that with these results. They've also cut their expenses down by 52%, and EBITDA loss of 1 million, and that's down from a loss of 2.5 million last time. net cash at the bank of $1.5 million. They had just over $2 million last time out. So still plenty of cash going forward. And clearly, you know, with the environmentally friendly products they've got, the joint ventures with Solvay, ExxonMobil, and particularly Croda, which they're seeing a lot of success with the going forward, then there's a great deal of potential here. Stock has come back a little bit, I think. It's been as high as 8p and as low as 1.25p, but there's a nice floor, I think, building up here, and we're seeing sort of a series of higher lows since the end of last year.
Mm-hmm. I give John a call, and I managed
John
to get,
Shaw, yeah.
Yeah, got through to him. I had a good chat, and the business is definitely going in the right direction. And it's growing well. And listen, there's a note out there saying they're going to double the revenue in the first half and the second half. So the second half revenue will double. So hopefully they're aiming for around about 1.5 million. Next year, they reckon they're going to double, more than double that, to 3.5 million. And the year after that, they're going to almost double again. So the growth is there. But at the moment, I just feel the valuation is a little ahead of itself. As yet, I understand the growth is good, but I hold stock, and I'm going to be scaling him more if this plays out. And sort of, John's not allowed to say whether the forecasts are spot on, but he didn't say they weren't, put it that way. It takes a couple of years, doesn't it, to get your polymers, your ingredients into these products from these big companies and the big players. And this is these are the next few years it's going to happen. You know, they're finally going to get revenue from this. So I think he's heading in the right direction. I just think, at the moment, we're talking about, let's say the revenue here is, let's say it is 3 million for this year. They are, double, twice that revenue on the, no, sorry, it's going to be 1.5 million. So they are four
1.
times.
Yeah,
so it'll be four times the current valuation on the revenue. And that's quite rich, that's quite steep.
It is rich, but I think it would be rich if the company was still at this point seeking joint venture partners to go ahead and market this with. But the fact is that they were the biggest players in the market already, ExxonMobil, Solvay and Croda. So they already have the distribution network in place. But it takes a long time to get these integrated into the product streams. And I think where John is right now, I think the channels are all there, the infrastructure's in place. Now they've just got to they've basically got to start churning the sausages out and getting the old sausage factory moving.
You don't sell sausages, Al.
I know they don't.
Right, listen.
Metaphorically speaking, figure speech, all the rest of it. You know, just start churning that big wheel. You know,
I was going to say that's a part of the research I missed there. I didn't see the sausage arm, and sausage arms brings a funny picture to mind. But I'm a buyer on dips here, I think. Any decent dips. I hold stock, I'm a buyer of dips, and I want to see it still developing. It's going in the right direction. Costs are coming down, there's growth here, revenue's going up. At the moment, though, I just think, 6 million, for 1.5 revenue.
It's heady. I agree with you, but I think that then you look at the fact that you've got a big institutional holding as well, 77% with institutions. And
I don't care about that. I'm just going on valuation. I don't care about institutions. I mean, listen, the stock is very tightly held, and I like the fact that the reason why I got into it is because John. I like John. He's got skin in the game. The recent CFO has got skin in the game. Over 60% of the stock is tightly held. I like it a lot. And that's why it moves quite quickly. I'm just thinking, listen, I like it. It's going in the right direction. I just think any dips I'm buying, I'm not buying rallies, though. I'm buying dips, not rallies. That's all I'm saying.
Buy the dips, That'd be a good name for a company, actually, wouldn't it? Dip, dip products.
Buy the dip.
I'm buying the dips,
Just list a company called Buy the Dip, and whatever it dips, people buy it. So what do you sell? Nothing.
We just sell dips.
Right, Marv. So I do like it. Listen, I'm still going to hold, but I'm not going to go nuts until we see end of year revenues. Do you know what? It's a steady business that's going to that should do well. I think in the long term. And that's what I was saying. At the moment, though, like I said, the revenue should. I've said what I think, but I'll buy the deal.
To me strategically, it's an obvious takeover target, isn't it? So one of the big boys is going to say, do you know what, they've done this road, got it so far down the road, let's bring that technology in the house, and we'll pay a premium for that.
It could be.
But speculation, caveat.
Cool. Okay, what's next? Anything else?
That's it. That's it from me to the Just.
Cool. Marvellous stuff, Al. Well, listen, we'll catch up next week. All right, fella?
Speak you next week, eh?
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They're at five, Hurricane Energy, HUR. At four, Carrero Network Security. That's CNS ticker there, up 13% a day. At three, it's i3 Energy. A big drop-off there, 40% down on sort of drilling, but a lot of people are saying that is just a pilot well. It was meant to gather more data and info. But it's... So hopefully we get the guys on the podcast to explain, but I know there's a lot of people jumping in there thinking, hang on, this is not the main event. At two, Rambler Metals and Mining, down 4%, RMM's ticker there. And number one most followed company is Zenith Energy, ZEN ticker. All right, top five most liked RNSs are as follows. At five, Valrix, that's Val 201 update. At four, Emerson, interim results. At three, Gulf Keystone Petroleum, recommencement of share buyback program. At two, Xeros Technology signs agreement with Washco in UK. And at one, Polarian Imaging, new system installation. And as always, by all means, check out my YouTube channel and you'll see a coverage of those two stocks there, Polarian and Xeros Technology. And that's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos. Appreciate it.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.